There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
You want to
keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Falb, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 546, January 19th, 2012. Stephen?
This F1Weekly podcast brought to you by Google Ads. Google Ads gets you the stuff you want, need, got to have today. Click on them, you know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. On today's program, Williams confirms Bruno Senna for the 2012 Formula One Championship season. Romagna will be missed by everyone on the F1 Weekly staff. Adrian Sutil to stand trial for the champagne glass incident. And of course, Motorsports Mondial with the King of Karachi himself. And special interview with British F3 racing driver Harry Tinknell. And of course, he loves his F1 Weekly. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers himself.
You were on holiday last week. How was it? Did you go skiing in the slopes of Grenoble? Or did you just simply go to Sardinia as usual?
Yeah, I wish you were that kind of vacation last week. Something else completely different. But glad to be back.
Excellent. I know you're a big curling fanatic, and I know the championships were in Winnipeg.
Oh, were they?
Yes. So keep up the good work.
That's where I want to be in January.
Exactly. Quickly, let's just go right to the big news, which we were anticipating for weeks and weeks.
Williams named a Brazilian as their second driver.
Yes.
But it's not the one you thought it was going to be.
Well, I thought Rubinho might sneak in at the last minute because I know he was trying to rustle up some cash. But in the end, Bruno Senna has been confirmed as Williams' driver alongside his Venezuelan buddy, Pastor Maldonado. And in the end, I think it's a good choice. We've got Williams Renault, then Senna. Okay, we got the Renault name back. We got Senna back. And of course, unfortunately, the Senna legacy died at Williams in 94, which was a very sad, sad scenario, a sad state of affairs for all of motorsports and the Brazilian people. But Senna is at Williams. He's looking forward to it. So some great pictures of him at the Williams Conference Centers where they have the vintages and stuff.
And he's got to love it because he doesn't have to change his helmet.
Exactly.
His visor, just the same visor he had last season. You know.
Renault. And it's going to be interesting. And I'm looking forward to it. But I have to admit that I thought for sure, and it's not over, Rubens Barrichello still has a chance to fool everyone and be on the grid in 2012, Stephen.
Well, I think, what are they saying? There are two more seats, basically, that are not confirmed or not pretty much taken.
Correct. So pretty much.
He conceivably could get one of them, but more than likely,
I mean, do you really?
Well, or was it just that Sutil said that there were two more seats that were open to him?
So. Well, there are two more seats open. I don't care what anybody says. And, of course, one is Yarno Trulli's seat at Caterham or Caterham.
Yeah, frankly, if I'm them, I'd take Sutil just to get... I truly can't be bringing anybody.
Not only that, but Trulli is definitely long in the tooth. On the other hand, when it comes to developing a car, trying to move forward...
Rubinho's their man.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
You have to admit it. Rubens Barrichello is the man. He's the equivalent to, and the reason why, HRT went with Pedro de la Rosa.
Oh, yeah, definitely, because you get someone who's experienced enough who can give feedback to the engineers and kind of help them along the trail.
Makes a huge difference.
And not only that, but I thought Yarno Trulli's attitude in some of the interviews during the 2011 season were definitely on the negative side, and Rubens Barrichello doesn't do that.
Well, not only that, but that's been his attitude since he was at Toyota. You know, I really had a hard time understanding why anybody brings him along, because if things aren't going exceptionally well, he's never one to try to pump up the team. He's lost before he's even started the race.
Yeah, I agree. And the issues with the power steering, you know, it wasn't to his liking, so they had brought in a different system, and then that would break down. They'd have to bring in the old system that he didn't like. There was a lot of whining from Trulli.
Yeah.
And I think Rubens Barrichello would be a really good replacement at Caterham or Caterham. Now, we have to talk about Vittorio Lisi's seat, Stephen, because that is on the brink.
Well, I think that one's up on the auction block.
It is pretty much on the auction block. Vittorio says it himself that right now everything is sort of vague. He doesn't know what's going on, even though he admits he feels like he should be locked into 2012 because he's had a two-year contract with HRT. I don't know, but HRT definitely leaning, you know, they're based out of...
Yeah, wasn't he under contract at Force India, too?
Yeah, he was at contract at Toro Rosso as well.
Yeah, so he kind of knows that... There's no guarantee with the contract. It just pretty much means you're going to get paid.
Exactly. So there's still possibilities for those two seats. Rubens Barrichello could just slide into 2012 pretty easily if he can. And, of course, Adrian Sutil can.
That would
as
be
well.
Really weird to basically have the youngest team on the grid with the two oldest drivers.
It would be fantastic. That would be great, wouldn't it?
That would just be completely weird.
Yeah. I mean, the food would be interesting. They're catering to, you know, older men. You know, concerned with gum disease and stuff like that.
Mashed rice and beans.
Yes. So, but still, I'm pretty pumped up about Williams. They're pretty pumped up. They're confident that they're going to take big steps forward because, of course, 2011 was their worst season yet. It enticed Patrick Head to retire.
Yeah, I think they really have almost nowhere else to go but up.
Yeah, I completely agree.
You know, with the fact that they're going to have Renault engines next season, I think it's going to make a huge difference for them. You know, the Cosworth is a decent motor. It's reliable, but it really does not have the bandwidth that, you know, the other three big motors have.
I completely agree. And let's not forget, their last win was with Juan Pablo Montoya. Believe it or not.
Oh, Williams, yes.
Yes. Yeah. So pretty
excited. Been a bit of a drought.
Yes. Quote from Bruno Senna. He says, "I'm really happy to be a part of a team with such fantastic heritage. I'm very proud that Williams has chosen moi to race in what will be an important year for them. I'm extremely motivated for 2012, and it's a great moment for me to be part of that motivation. It is true that they didn't have the best season last year, but it is clear that the team is on a new path and everyone is pulling together." Now, they did some interviewing of him, which is the standard procedure with the press, and some people asked him about the Renault package, having raced it last season. What do you think Renault could bring to Williams? And, of course, he said, "After a few races with the Renault engine 2011, I've learned a great deal about it. It is a very good unit with good drivability." And that's the key word, drivability, which is used a lot in conjunction with that bandwidth.
Yeah, the power band, the way it accelerates, the way it uses low-end torque and, you know, gets up to the higher revs quickly, but with a good, solid, you know, oomph.
And he says, "I'm sure we can develop the car even further with the Renault package, and it will be interesting for me to be able to give the team feedback applying my previous experience." Of course, it's not huge.
Will they be using Renault gearboxes or just the engine?
No, I think it's going to be just the motor. Williams has been famous for making their own gearboxes for many moons.
Right.
And I'm sure they're going to stick to that recipe, including their KERS unit. But I think they still will get some input from Renault engineering.
They'll get some technical assistance. You know, you've got to mate these three entities together, and you can't really do that. Here's your motor.
Well, it's going to be fascinating. Luckily for them, lots of data is kept in the banks, in the archives, and I think Williams is not going to have any trouble getting this Renault to perform well in the back of the car.
No, I don't think so either.
So I can't wait to see some testing, and I certainly hope it'll be broadcast on some European TV that I can stream online.
Exactly. Somebody do a report, please.
Thank you, Stephen. Good news out of the United States, the New Jersey Grand Prix, as they're calling it. Organizers have appointed a key dude, Tom Cotter, who has headed a successful motorsports marketing agency, the Cotter Group. He's appointed as the president of the race promotion company, and which is good news. That means these guys are gearing up
to actually promote the damn thing.
Yeah, which is really important. And the New Jersey race promoter and director, Leo Hindery Jr., has said that it's vital that we have a leadership team that is highly respected in motorsports and running major sporting events in the region, and that understands and respects our overriding responsibilities to the fans and the people of New York and New Jersey. So, good steps in the right direction for 2013.
Yeah.
I think it's going to happen because they...
Well, I have really no worries about that race taking place. It's because... It's more of a temporary circuit, so it's, you know, there's no issue with getting the track built, so to speak. And the people that are involved aren't really going to let this fall on its face because they have too much face to lose.
Right. Speaking of racetracks that have been built, Nürburgring, operators of the Nürburgring have taken some of their employees and said, you're fired.
Sacked them.
Yeah, unfortunately, 100 jobs at the circuit. There's still hope that the Formula One race will come back because they're selected for 2013, I believe. But since 2007, the circuit has shared the country's F1 race with Hockenheim off and on. And despite...
They really don't have enough events to go on at the track.
Well, it used to be called the European Grand Prix. And, of course, now the European Grand Prix is in Valencia. That has some problems.
Yeah, that's
everybody has some financial problems. And
well, if you listen to Bernie, you know, Europe's dead.
Well, of course, but still Bernie knows that Europe is fundamental.
Yeah, you've got to be in Europe because where the team's based.
No, but I think we're
going to
see...
Where's your biggest paycheck coming from?
Yeah, but we're going to see more and more of these races alternate from year to year. France, Belgium, Barcelona, Valencia... Hockenheim, Nürburgring, so on and so forth.
Right.
The only one that I think is going to be stable, well, the jewels, the crown jewels, Stephen.
Yeah.
Monaco, Monza.
And those. Silverstone. Well, Silverstone's got a contract through, what, 20?
And Silverstone, or, yeah. Silverstone will definitely, I think, be okay.
Yeah, well, didn't Bernie sign a new contract with them for through
but
2025 or something?
Something like that. But those, to me, contracts are useless and pointless.
Especially in Formula One.
Yes. Still pretty exciting. And I'd rather see them alternate than disappear.
Definitely. Especially if you start talking about something like Spa.
Absolutely. Which really should be up every year.
Yes.
And so should France. But we'll see how... far France gets, we're supposed to get an announcement in February, but I still don't see Bernie putting his own money into Paul Ricard.
No, he has no
to upgrade.
No, he's never. That's never. Look what happened with Turkey when he kind of took over there. He basically just let it die on the vine too.
Yeah, because Paul Ricard is going to take at least a couple of years of construction to get it up to speed. At least 1 year.
Yeah, well, because it's got the track. It really
the track is fine.
Doesn't have any.
If they need the infrastructure for all those highfalutin mucky mucks.
Or for the fans in general, period, because that track is basically a test track.
Correct. It is just a test track, but still, it's a fine track. And and they still have races there. I mean,
yeah.
A number of formulas go there. So we'll see what happens. Damon Hill, he's going to be...
He was kind of chatty.
Chatty?
Holy cow.
I couldn't believe it. He was commenting on everybody. Rubens Barrichello, whether Bahrain is politically correct to have a Formula One race. Of course, he's going to be a pundit now for Sky TV.
Yeah. Louis threw his 2 cents about Louis. And
he was out of control.
David Hill says, what the?
He's a chatterbox, and I didn't realize that because usually he's a pretty quiet fella.
Yeah. Well, he's probably... probably being encouraged by Sky to get his name out there and, you know, make some comments so that, you know, people realize that he's going to be on TV again.
That's true. And he's a fairly intelligent and articulate guy, so I'm looking forward to that. It should be interesting. No news on where Eddie Jordan is going to be. I think he's still going to stick with the BBC.
The Beeb.
But we shall see. Quickly, before we go to break, I want to talk about Rubinho. Where do you think he might be going? He's probably on the phone with Tony Kanaan. Maybe getting a little 7-Eleven money, even though I don't think Tony Kanaan has 7-Eleven anymore.
No, I don't believe he does. I really can't see him coming across the pond and racing an Indy. There really aren't enough seats, and there's not much money there. But who knows? But if he doesn't land one of the jobs in Formula One, I don't see him trying to get into DTM. I would think that he would retire, or he would try to get a job with a team doing some other, you know, coach or something.
I think he's going to be on Brazilian television, Stephen.
Yeah, good point.
He's the most experienced Formula One driver on the grid. Well, was on the grid.
Right. And he would have an in with a lot of interview type stuff to, you know, go and talk with
other drivers. He's a super nice guy. I'm really going to miss Rubinho.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. But
he's got to go do something because his wife probably doesn't want him to come home.
I don't know about that. I'm not going to get involved with that, Stephen. But still, it's going to be very, very interesting. We're going to take a quick break. I want to remind everybody we've got a great interview with British F3 driver Harry Tinknell. And this is our first, or Nasser's first, Skype interview. We're streamlining and going high tech, Stephen,
for the 2012 season. We can get more interviews that way.
Exactly. So there you have it. Anyway, we'll be back after this brief message. Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you. Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king himself, Nasser Hamid.
Greetings, musical and racing regards from Peru, where the Dakar Rally came to an end on Sunday. Perfect 10 for Robbie Gordon's new best friend, Stefan Peter Hensel. Have you seen how quickly Robbie Gordon influences and becomes friends with people?
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah. Peter Hensel's fellow Francais, Cyril Dupré, is the winner on bike, so good for France and for you also, obviously. Double Dutch treat in New Zealand in the Toyota Racing Series. A friend of F1 Weekly wins two of the three races on the opening weekend.
So our karma is rubbing off on these guys.
That's very good. Dubai 24 Hours, and boy, this was interesting. A camel ride to the podium for the winners. Only in Dubai. You won't see that at Hockenheim Ring.
You won't?
No, I don't think so.
Have you? A vintage Lotus with...
Yeah, there you go. Open mind, just like Steve Favre. Very interesting. And later in show, we have another first for F1 Weekly. From digital dialogue, we have now moved on to Skyping with men and women who are doing the driving. And Tinks was the first, and we have also recorded an interesting interview with young rising American talent, Mr. Zach Veach, which was done just prior to the recording of this show. So hopefully we should be able to talk to some drivers, two or three drivers every month. And I'm looking forward to it. And tomorrow, actually, we're doing a Skyping chit-chat with one of our original long-time listeners, Mr. Balraj Thaliwal in Australia.
Oh, yes, so, yes.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, he's been around for a long time.
Yeah, and he's been a faithful listener to F1 Weekly and living in near Melbourne. Okay, we start with what used to be called Paris-Dakar Rally. And any of our listeners who want to do a Skype chat, because we want to listen to, especially during the off-season, if they want to do a chit-chat with us and we put it on the show, they are welcome to send us an email. And we'll try to accommodate.
Send you their handle on Skype, and then you will connect with them?
Yes, sir.
That's so beautiful, Nasser.
No charge to calling party.
That's beautiful.
We're here to help, Clark. And they are also here to help us with their digital slings and arrows and, you know, stuff they do, which we appreciate. Anyway, we start with what used to be called Paris-Dakar Rally. Today, it no longer starts from Paris and does not even visit the African continent. And I feel kind of bad about that. Welcome to Argentina, Chile, and Peru for the 2012 Dakar Rally. Did you watch any of the stuff, sir?
Oh, yeah. Very exciting stuff. And read the press releases daily. Fantastic stuff. A lot of good fighting. I'm glad Robbie Gordon didn't get disqualified by the FIA. They were on top of it, though.
Yeah. A very impressive win number 10 for Stefan Peter Hensel. His first victory in South America. He was driving a Monster-sponsored Mini. He now has 6 wins on 2 wheels and 4 on 4 wheels in the Dakar Rally. Second was Spaniard Nani Roma in another Mini. And I have to say, I was watching this coverage, and the commentator was Jan Bikas, who was a commentator for IndyCar Racing here and, of course, an IndyCar driver. He's from Salinas area here in California. He did a very good job. I was very impressed. Previous winner of the event, Janiel De Villiers of South Africa, was third in a Toyota Hilux truck. And Toyota Hilux truck is a very common model outside the United States. For whatever reason, they don't use that
name
here.
Well, they used the term Hilux many moons ago in the United States. Toyota Hilux trucks were sold in the 70s and used the Hilux name, but then they removed it because Hilux in America, people think they're looking for high luxury and they get in the truck and no luxury.
4 cylinders?
Correct.
They thought it was like a Beverly Hills 16-wheeler. Okay, yeah. Okay, that explains. Third Mini in the top 4 was driven by Russian Leonid Novitsky. Orange County's finest, Robbie Gordon, was 5th in his orange Hummer, while his teammate and defending champion, Nasser Al-Attiyah, did not finish due to mechanical issues. And Robbie Gordon had some choice words for Peter Hensel after he was accused of cheating, and I was thinking of getting a YouTube thing link and putting it, but, you know, this is a family show.
It is a family show.
We don't want to get into bad language here.
No. He had some pretty choice words for his teammate, too.
Yeah. Yeah, Robbie Gordon at one time when he was in with Felix Sabadis racing NASCAR, it was like one weekend he's having a dispute with the team owner, next weekend it's the crew chief, a third weekend is one of the engineers, so some guy wrote in a magazine, okay, well, we have a NASCAR race this weekend, who will Robbie Gordon pick a fight with? But a tremendous motorsports talent, there's no question about it. Okay, from the sands of Peru, we move to the desert of Dubai and the Dubai 24 Hours. The 7th running saw an all-Mercedes podium. And this, some of the race you could see, they had a couple of, I think, cameras on their website you could see. So this was interesting. The winning cars were the SLS AMG GT3 model. Winning car was driven by local yokel Khalid Al-Khubesi, Sean Edwards, Jeroen Bleekemolen, his Papito Michael made it to F1, and Thomas Jaeger. And I think this Jaeger is from Germany. There's also, I think, a Thomas Jaeger, racing kid from Österreich Republic. There were some interesting names on the entry list. Gerard Lopez and Eric Lux of Jenny Capital fame and Adrian Sutil shame. Thomas Enge and Andreas Zuber. And Cora Schumacher was also racing in a Mini, the car that is.
I miss her.
Really?
Yeah, I liked Cora. She was a hottie.
Yeah, she is as sophisticated as... Remember Michael Andretti's first wife, Sandy?
Listen, Nasser, some women
don't need sophistication.
They are so sophisticated, they don't need sophistication.
Exactly. Okay. That's the key. And for Ralph, you know, that's what he needs.
Let me tell you, nothing beats a mink coat on a hot summer day in the paddock during a race.
Of course, with Ron Dennis looking.
Oh, yeah. And then calling your husband while he's qualifying in a very tough environment. Hey, what's for dinner? Boy, boy, boy.
Those were the days.
Those were the days, my friend. So that's the way it goes. Now we come to a segment called Driver's Diary.
Now, you haven't done this segment for a while.
Well, you know, it's off-season, so we need to come up with something. We don't fabricate news here, but we can at least gather some information, which our listeners may enjoy, hopefully. So Sims plays his card. English driver Alexander Sims is putting his single-seater aspirations on hold. The 22-year-old has signed to race a McLaren MP4-2C GT3 category this season. Sims was the 2008 McLaren Autosport BRDC Award winner and made this decision after Western Union man delivered the oh-so-common end-of-season message from sponsor Gravity Management. Your services are no longer required.
Doop. See, we never use that sentence here at F1 Weekly.
No, really? You're fired.
Exactly.
Really? Wow, that's nice to know that. That's called job
security. That's just way too many words for me, man.
Yeah. Okay, James Hinchcliffe, 25-year-old Canadian, will race for Andretti Autosports in IndyCar racing this season, replacing the late Dan Weldon. Hinchcliffe was Rookie of the Year in IndyCars last season. His best was fourth in the streets of Long Beach and roundy rounds at New Hampshire and Kentucky. Now, let me tell you, I'm always impressed when a driver like David Coulthard, how many Grand Prix wins? That's 12, 13, highest scoring points, British driver, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he is.
Right? And if he was not that good, he was not. He would have never survived so long in Formula One. When a driver like that makes a comment, it's amazing how fast Mika and Kimi can go without even trying. You can imagine what kind of talent these people have. Hinchcliffe, I followed his career for quite a while. He's a very good driver. When he was in Atlantics, there is this kid from Brazil, Rafael Matos. And nobody would confuse Rafael Matos with, Ayrton Senna or Emerson Fittipaldi. Hinchcliffe said to me, it's very hard to win against good drivers like Rafael Matos. So there is always a lot of talent floating around that even if you are very good, it's just not a walk in the park to win races. As we shall find out with your next fellow Français, Nicolas Minassian. Oh boy, what a story this was. Ex-IndyCar driver with Chip Ganassi has left the Peugeot team as he wants to race in more than two events in a season. And who can blame him? And today we get the news, Peugeot has pulled the plug on their racing program, effective immediately. And this was sad news, it was a beautiful car and they were a very competitive threat to Audi at Le Mans. So I'm kind of disappointed to see them go. But,
well,
you know.
It's the mucky mucks up at the top.
Financial realities, are rattling the cages of mucky mucks.
Exactly. And this happens. They got the call, shut it down.
Well, they also kind of achieved the goal that they set when they went in to Le Mans.
Right.
And for them, give them 5 or 6 years and they'll go, hey, let's. They'll do it again.
I know, and it's a classic attitude in motorsports. You know, once you've reached your goals, why continue?
Yeah, and a lot of these things are driven obviously by money, but also if a guy making the decision, there is always a lot of power play and personality clashes.
Absolutely. And I know PSA. I mean Peugeot. There's still a lot of family Peugeot members involved, and their sales have been down.
Yeah. So that's the way it goes.
And motor racing only goes so far for marketing.
Yeah, but good thing is Toyota is coming, so at least there'll be some more action. The Toyota looked very strong in Le Mans just before they pulled over. They almost won the Le Mans.
Yeah, they still have the facility in Cologne.
Oh, yeah.
And with Porsche coming back, I believe not until 2014,
There's going to be plenty of excitement.
Yeah, and somebody else may jump in. Remember at one time Cadillac had a car at Le Mans some years ago?
Absolutely, and there could be some privately entered Peugeots.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yes, you never know what Pescarolo is going to do. A lot of weird things can happen.
Well, the year I was there, you know, the Pescarolo Peugeot collided in the pit lane with the factory car, and that did not go well with
He's been blacklisted.
Yeah, yeah. And that's when they went with the Hewlett Knox Orica team. But these things happen. Okay, we stay on the French team here. Michel Mouton, the ex-Audi rally star and winner of Pike Peaks, has been honored by French President Nicolas Sarkozy with... Will you read this award, please?
Chevalier Légion d'honneur.
Légion d'honneur. What does that mean? Légion of honor?
Yeah, it's some big frou-frou and some fra-fra and... You know, they play La Marseillaise and everybody gets teary-eyed. And
you get a medal.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Wow.
Free champagne.
Get your name on a wall.
And lots of hors d'oeuvres.
Hors d'oeuvres, very good, very good. Good for Michelle. Well, she was a very good rally driver.
I mean, obviously she's been around.
Yeah,
and heavily involved in a lot of activities.
Well, she's the one who came up with the, you know, behind the Race of Champions.
Of course, I know that.
And her husband is a Swedish journalist. By the way, you know, talking about a good driver, I was talking to Bobby Bobby Unser. He told me, you know, the driver who I was asking about, good driver, and he mentioned Michel Mouton's name.
Really? Because Bobby Unser mentioned Michel Mouton?
Because she came to Pikes Peak and set a new record when she won the event, I believe, 1985.
Maybe she winked at him a little bit.
Okay, time to move on. Okay. Mark Brundle, he will join United Autosports team, which is owned by Zach Brown of Just Marketing fame, to compete in the 2012 Blancpain Endurance Series. So that's good. Now we have another new segment. It's called Brazier's Bag.
Uh-oh.
Our Executive Vice President of European Operations, Mr. Brazier, has sent us a digital goodie bag, the January 12th edition of Autosport, which has a special feature on Jim Clark. And this edition is highly, highly recommended. Autosport is a great magazine, and so is Motorsport. And here is my favorite quote from the magazine. Jimmy and Colin Chapman came from different worlds. Colin was very pushy, and Jimmy was far more sophisticated, but they worked well, very well together. End of quote. And in the U.S., again, just to help people know where they can get this, normally I've seen, you know, the Barnes & Noble in this area, it's sometimes they'll have it and then they won't have it for a year and a half. They'll have it for a few weeks. So location here is not reliable. But a lot of Barnes & Noble stores, other places have carried or may still carry Autosport. And also this business called, you know, most tracks have shops. But Sears Point shop is called Wine Country Motorsports. And this is just a public service message. We're not trying to plug anybody. They normally do carry this. So if you're in the U.S., you can log on to Wine Country Motorsports at Laguna Seca, also known as Infineon Raceway. Talking with Tinks, this is our next segment, and my thanks to Harry Tinknell for being the first ever driver to be interviewed by F1 Weekly.
Guinea pig.
On Skype, but it was a successful guinea pig situation. We now invite you, our listeners, our family members, F1 Weekly family plus tax. We now invite you to enjoy our first ever Skype conversation with British Formula 3 race-winning driver Harry Tinknell. Harry is a young man in a hurry after discovering karting in Sardinia while on a family vacation. Harry and I first met in the desert of Central California in 2007, winter of 2007, when he came out to test a Formula BMW car at the beautiful Button Willow Raceway, which is a nice track. And it's a very good for testing, but not a place you go for champagne and caviar. So, you know, a sophisticated gentleman like you might not be seen in Bakersfield or Button Willow, unless you're trying to get some Bakersfield onion for French onion soup. And I'm sure you do that quite a bit. Right?
Absolutely.
There you go.
We call it Bakersfield.
Very beautiful. What do you call Boise, Idaho?
No, we don't want to go there.
Boise. Okay, his first full season in single-seaters was in 2009. He was fifth in the Michelin Formula Renault UK Championship and won the Winter Cup, winning two of the four races. He repeated the Formula Renault Championship, again finishing fifth, scoring 2 wins and 7 podium finishes. Last season, he moved up to British Formula 3 with Fortec Motorsports, taking 1 win and 4 podium finishes to finish 11th in the standings. And like I always said, if a young driver can win a race in any series in his first year, that is a very good sign of, you know, that there is hidden talent there and it can be nurtured into bigger and better things. Tinknell is also on Twitter, and we invite you to visit his website, www.harrytinknellracing.com, and his last name is spelled T-I-N-C-K-N-E-L-L. And also, you know, when Mr. Brazier and I went to British F3 race last year, it was the courtesy of Harry and his manager, who is also Harry Sorden, and they gave us passes, so
yeah, because, life was good. Because we were...
Access was denied by the media people. But I understand if they don't give media passes to, you know, web flunkies, that's okay. We're not flunkies.
Web
we're,
flunkies?
Yeah. We are not web flunkies. They may think that way. We're F1 Weekly.
Thank you, man.
One of the longest-standing podcasts.
Pretty much.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we've blown everybody out of the water.
Yeah, including ourselves sometimes.
That's part of the game.
Absolutely. Okay, sir, folks, please enjoy this conversation with Harry Tinknell, racing in British Formula 3, and my thanks again to Harry for his time and cooperation.
Okay, folks, on the line all the way from Solihull, England, is our old buddy from Button Willow, Mr. Harry Tinknell. Tinks, welcome back to F1 Weekly, and congratulations, you are the first to be interviewed via Skype.
Thanks, Nasser. It's an honour. It's pretty cool how we can actually talk on this, 6,000-7,000 miles away. I'm quite impressed with the quality, actually.
Thank you. First of all, you know, will you please update our listeners as to your hand injury that you had last year and how you are doing health-wise right now?
Yeah, sure. I had an unfortunate accident over in Spa in testing in November, and I basically caught my hand in the steering wheel, and it broke my fourth finger on my right hand, and I had to have a operation because it basically split the bone down the middle. It was really nasty, and to have two pins put in my hand, basically just to fix the two parts of the bone that come apart back together, and it's obviously a lengthy injury. And the doctor actually said to me, if I'd done this to my knee, I probably wouldn't walk again. So this is how serious the actual injury was. But it's recovering well. I'm back training full-time now up at the Red Bull. And that's going well. I've missed a bit of training, so I certainly need to get on the treadmill a bit more because I'm not at the fitness level I need to be yet. But the first test is in March, so I've still got a bit of time. So just working hard on that at the moment. But everything's looking good, and the doctors are happy with the hand.
So you feel comfortable that your injury, by the time racing season starts, has totally healed and you're up to, you know, par?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got pretty much full motion in the hand now. We've still got quite a long time to go. So everyone's happy with how it's going, and, just can't wait to get back in the car.
And if I may ask, what was the cause of the accident? Driver error or mechanical failure?
No, it was just me pushing a bit too hard. From the final runs of the day on new tyres, I'd been fast all day and wanted to just push a little bit more. I was quickest all day, really, so just looking for the final few tenths. And unfortunately, just had a little bit of oversteer in the corner before Poo on the left-hander. And some of you may know, there's not much runoff on the outside there, and just lost the car. And before I could really even take my hands off the steering wheel, I was already in the wall. So it was over before I even kind of realized what was going on. So definitely my fault, but it could be worse.
Yes, and you know, bright side is, if I may use that word, is that it happened after the season and well before the season starting this year, so you can jump in and show what things can do.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, if it was going to happen at any time, this is the best time for it to happen. I only missed three more test days that were planned before the end of the season, and now I've got the exciting new Formula 3 2012 car coming out this year, so brand new car. So really, I didn't actually miss too much by missing those tests, and excited to be out in the new car and with a new team.
Okay, well, we will talk about the new team in a minute. Let's do a review of the 2011 season, your first in British F3, and very impressively, you had a win. Overall, how was the season on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being best?
I think it was probably about a 5.5, 6. I had a tough opening weekend in Monza. Kind of got battered around a bit by the more experienced boys and had a few incidents, but bounced back at Alton Park, which you were obviously there attending, and had my first podium in Formula 3 with a third. And Alton Park's one of my favourite tracks, so really happy with that. And then I went on to the next meeting, I had a second at Snetterton, and then the meeting after that, a first at Brands Hatch, so I kind of continued the trend. So, yeah, really happy with the win at Brands. It's a really ballsy track, and, yeah, just one of the absolute classics, I think, in the world. I'm sure you wouldn't find the racing fan anywhere that didn't know, you know, what brand, where Brands Hatch was and what it's like, so really happy with that. And, yeah, then I had a third at Nürburgring, the meeting after, and up to that point, the season was going well. I think I was about 6th or 7th in the championship in the leading rookie. But then I started to get had a few mechanical failures at Paul Ricard and at Donington Park, and I made a few mistakes myself. I went off on a drying track at Spa, and at the time I was, you know, in a good position, but because the track was drying, I ended up starting last for that, which is not good. So I had to fight my way through the field, but yeah, a few mistakes on my part, a few, you know, mechanical problems, and a few incidents meant that I couldn't continue the second half of the season as well as I'd started it. And so the overall finishing position I wasn't overly happy with, but obviously a lot of highs to take from the season with the win and the four podiums and the experience. And I've learned a lot with Fortec last year, and I can only be grateful for everything they did with me.
Now, let me ask you a question. I've seen young drivers in junior series like Formula Renault, Formula BMW, Formula Ford. It's a happy-go-lucky crowd, and it's very good to see that. Formula 3 starts getting pretty serious business. Does the camaraderie stays the same? Can you get help from drivers, experienced drivers, or is it a cutthroat dog-eat-dog world already?
I think certainly Formula 3 really starting to get into a series where the F1 bosses are really seriously taking a look at it, and if you can perform there, then, you know, it could possibly open a lot of doors. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, in any race in Formula E, it's karting or Formula 1, everyone wants to beat each other, so it's always going to be competitive. But we were actually lucky this year to have Roberto Meri, who won the Euro Series, and the races where the FIA Formula 3 Championship coincided with the British Formula 3 Championship at Spa, and Roberto was also driver coaching at Paul Ricard. He came and gave us advice, and we were able to share data, and he actually went on to win the race. So it just shows that because Roberto liked the team and the management, he was quite willing to help us out. So there's still a bit of camaraderie, but like I say, when we get out on the track, everyone just wants to beat each other.
You can hear the dogs barking, huh?
Exactly.
Okay, looking back, note with interest, you had a very good run with our good friend Mr. Dutton and his Fortec Motorsports, and now you're going with Carlin, who were very successful last year, with my cousin, Felipe Nasser. What made the change of team happen? Was it the Volkswagen power versus Mercedes, or do you like Stephanie Tindall better, PR person?
Like I say, I think I learnt a massive amount with Fortec, and it was a good year. It could have been better, but certainly could have been a lot worse. And I was very grateful for, you know, all their help and advice. But Carlin approached us and asked us if we'd like to test, and I did so. And I think, you know, it went really well, and I don't know, I think the results kind of speak for themselves a bit. They've been the champions for the last 4 years in a row, and if you look at the drivers on their roster that have gone on now, you know, you've got Ricciardo and Wern, who are now obviously in Toro Rosso, and Alguersuari, who one of them's replaced, and you know, even the guys that haven't quite made it, people like Oliver Turvey and people like that, they've gone on to do a lot of things in their career. So these are just the recent guys, obviously. You've got Takuma Sato and Carter Kane, all these sorts of people, you know. So, but when we actually sat down, they basically just made us an offer we couldn't refuse, and with the results and everything like that, I mean, we just couldn't say anything. Good terms with Vortex, still good friends with them, and thanking them for everything I did, but really excited to you know, crack on with the Carlin setup. And they've just opened a new factory down in Farnham and near Woking, and it's exceptionally impressive. You know, serious stuff, and I think you can almost run a small Formula One team from there. So it just shows their commitment and passion, and yeah, really excited to be going to the champion team.
Okay, before you signed up with Carlin for this year British F3, Tweety Bird told us that Tinks was also looking at racing on this side of the pond. What did you look at, and how far did you go into that process?
Well, I think in all sort of off-season, you have to assess as, you know, your options as best you can, and we had a look into the American scene in the Star Mazda series, because I think the actual the ladder in America is quite clear cut, and if you can, you know, do well in the first series, it progresses to Indy Lights, and if you can do well in Indy Lights, obviously progress to IndyCar. So it's certainly you know, a good easy, well, not easy, but clear sort of stepping stone, if you get what I mean. And it was just one of many, many considerations. Also consideration in Japan in Formula 3 as well. So, you know, from one side of the world to the other, there's many sort of considerations. But obviously my dream is to go to Formula 1, and because, you know, the sponsorship funding and everything was still there to compete in the in Europe, we decided to do Formula 3 and continue on that quest. But you know, a good friend of mine, Oliver Webb, has just signed in Indy Lights, and be interesting to see how he gets on this year. And it's certainly a consideration for a lot of the guys. When I was at the Autosport show this week, and there's a few guys actually considering coming over to America, because I think there's a good opportunity to come and become a professional racing driver. And that's obviously what all of us want to be one day.
Great. Yeah, we wish you all the best. Now, I will be at the Oulton Park again. Question I have for you is, what's for dinner, fish and chips or chicken curry and samosa?
Well, maybe a fish and chips on the Saturday or the Sunday night once we've won the races, maybe. But I think I'm just going to have to go for pasta, as I'm a young and healthy and fit man. But I'll let you have whatever you want.
So basically what you're saying, I'm all in fat and ugly. Thanks, Kings.
No, definitely not. No, I'm looking forward to seeing you again there. It's going to be a good weekend, I think. You know, there's always a big crowd at Oulton Park, and hopefully the British weather will give us a break for that weekend.
Yes, I'm coming with our Executive Vice President of F1 Weekly Operation, Mr. Peter Brazier. So we look forward to seeing you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, looking forward to it.
And finally, how about a message for listeners of F1 Weekly? And as you know, we have quite a few listeners in the UK. So what say you, Tinks?
Well, I'd just like to say thank you very much for supporting me and giving me some time on your show. And keep listening, and hopefully NASA will be able to give you an update after Oulton Park when I've had a successful weekend. So look forward to seeing you then.
I certainly hope so. Thank you so much, and take care.
Thank you very much, mate.
Good night.
Harry, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And now let's go right into the wrap-up. The 2012 Motorsports Memories Calendar, one and only. We still have a few left on the shelves, Nasser.
Yes, sir. And how to order? Go to the
merchandise. F1Weekly.com.
Yeah, web page, and you know it's there. And my special thanks to our man in New Zealand, Garrett. Garrett, you are the man. He knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it was delivered on that Italian ship.
Yeah, his first copy of the calendar came through that Italian ship.
Exactly. Anyway, Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2012 Red Line Oil Karting Championship. Cameron Karting offers CRG karts, engines, and parts for all karts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California karters. For more information, contact CameronKarting.com. I want to mention our Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and MySpace. Just do a search for F1 Weekly or us as individuals and send us a tweet. And we will tweet back.
Yeah.
If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email me at info@f1weekly.com. We are looking for a sponsor to take care of our expenses for Motorsports Mondial. Because Nasser has very many needs.
Really?
Yes. Very expensive. But still, yeah, give me an email.
Well info. Worth it.
Exactly. So anyway, there you go. Off season, a little bit slow. We're going to get some more interviews from Nasser. He's out there digging them up, and we just love it.
Yeah, like the song, Digging Up Bones.
Thanks, Nas.
Maybe, you know what, I kid you not, this might be a chance, an opportunity, well, because NASCAR season starts in Daytona in next month, obviously. Maybe I should try to reach some young NASCAR drivers who are using, you know, Twitter and
absolutely. Skype. I think all NASCAR drivers are using Twitter and everything else.
And guess who's in NASCAR now? Your favorite race car driver.
My favorite?
Danica Patrick.
Oh, Danica! Yeah. La petite salope!
Wouldn't it be fun to do a Skype interview with Danica?
Oh, it'd be the best. Our ratings would just go through the roof.
Absolutely.
We'd have to beat the sponsors down.
Whoa. Perky Jerky. I think they're coming.
You know what? I'm going to email them tomorrow morning.
You do so.
Okay, thanks, Nas. And you know what?
We can call Motorsports Mondial Perky Mondial.
If we have to, we do what we have to do for the mighty dollar.
There you go.
Thank you, Nas. Anyway, thanks for listening and good night.
Bye.
Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. Thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.